That was, of course, Nancy Boy from the popular music combo Placebo, and Brian Molko from popular recording combo Placebo is here with me now. Brian, great to see you again.
Hi, Jonathan.
Listen, A, I can't believe the band's 20 years old. B, I can't believe you're 20 years old. You look like you're a 16-year-old. What kind of alchemy are you working?
What kind of alchemy?
Yeah, how are you staying so youthful?
It's got something to do with arrested development of that happens when you're in a rock band.
When you're in a band. So it's a sort of, in some ways...
It's a Peter Pan thing.
A stress-free life.
No. Are you kidding me? yours is stress-free compared to mine.
The speed with which you reacted to that accusation was alarming. So 20 years, it can't feel like 20 years to you since the band first burst upon the scene.
It feels like a different universe. Mm. It's a very strange thing for me. I feel like I've just kind of arrived here.
If you were looking back as to Brian in the band then and Brian now... What were your hopes for Placebo, and how many of them did you realise, and how many are yet to be achieved?
Well, all I wanted to do was do everything I could to not get a job in an office. That was my main motivation. So I would have been happy to just feed myself and house myself.
As long as you could keep yourself in T-shirts and snack food, you would have been a happy man.
Yes, that was it.
So job done on that level.
Yeah, well, yeah, very quickly.
But artistically, what were you striving for?
I wanted the band to be fierce, punky, and atonal. And I wanted it to be a band that caught your attention, basically.
Well, looks-wise, you did that from the get-go because you came out there and you had that slightly androgynous sort of cross-dressing thing going on. That was what you were comfortable in?
It wasn't slightly.
Yeah, it was pretty full-on. Yeah. So was that just what you wanted to wear anyway, or was that deliberately like, okay, this is an image which we know will arrest attention?
No. I mean, I started getting mistaken for a woman when I was at university because I had really long hair. And I'm like Eddie Izzard, you know. I enjoy the clothing freedom.
You've always been fluid when it comes to clothing choices.
Well, it's, you know, there's a certain freedom to it, you know, which women have, which men don't have, you know. And so I used to go around to my girlfriend's house and put on a dress and just hang out, you know, kind of thing. And but then when we started a band, it almost was a reaction to the music scene at the time. It became a political act, basically.
So what were you reacting against then? Because this was the beginning of grunge, I guess, in the States, or had they already been established?
Never Mind came out in 1991 when I was at university.
They've been there for a while.
We're reacting against the British music scene, you know, Britpop, that kind of thing, which was very macho.
It seemed quite laddish, when you examine the lyrics of Blur, for example, they're not. But at the same time, it seemed like it was a sort of a laddish club culture thing going on.
Yeah, very much so. And we kind of wanted to challenge that. And very much the cross-dressing became a political act for us.
So really. job done again. Boom. So two ticked off the list. Recording with David Bowie, that must have been a remarkable moment in your career.
Yes, one of the most remarkable.
How did that come about?
He phoned me. I was on holiday in Barbados with my brother, but my brother was sleeping next to the phone. I mean, that's a lot of people have told me this. It's like when David had an idea, like he wouldn't get his people to call you, he'd call you. And I remember being woken up by my brother at 10 in the morning and he's shoving a telephone in my face. And I'm like, it's like, it's David Bowie. I was like, okay, I better take it. You know, and I'm like, hello, David. Hello, Brian. And then he goes, you know, that song of yours, Without You, I'm Nothing, I really like it, you know. So I've kind of written my own vocal part, you know, and I think we should record it. And I went, okay, as you do. So he called me, he liked that song so much that he wrote himself into it.
I think we should play that. If we can dig that up, we should play that just to remind ourselves. But presumably he was an influence on you before then. I mean, it isn't apparent necessarily that clearly in your music because it's uniquely yours. But at the same time, he influenced everyone, I guess.
Yeah, like the Velvet Underground did, I think. But yeah, I guess in terms of... there's so many periods in David's work, you know. I was... In terms of influence, it's probably like the Ziggy period, you know. That's a perfectly crafted universe, that record, you know. you know, the quality of the rock and roll that's on that record.
The songs are.
It's pure rock and
they
roll.
They are remarkable. They are remarkable. So you have the new album out, and it's a best of album. A Place for Us to Dream is his 20 years of Placebo. What if you had to choose the best of Placebo, not in terms of music, but just in terms of the experience, perhaps, or the moments, what would be the moments that were in your top 10 list?
Well, I mean, they're all very blurry, you know. They all kind of happen at the beginning, you know. We're all under the influence of something.
Youthful, high spirits.
Yeah. I mean, we played Madison Square Garden. We opened for Bowie on his birthday party before we even had a record deal. So that was pretty cool. I've shared the stage with a lot of my heroes, people I grew up listening to. People like Frank Black, Robert Smith.
Did you mentioned Velvet Underground. Lou Reed, did you ever work with Lou?
No, but I did meet him.
And was he friendly and warm? Because he had a reputation of sometimes being somewhat curmudgeonly.
Well, yes. It's funny you should mention it, you know, because I was at David Bowie introduced me to Lou Reed at his birthday party.
There's a sentence we should linger on. David Bowie introduced you to Lou Reed at his birthday party. That's something to... Let's pause and enjoy that moment, shall
okay,
we?
Okay, let's...
Okay.
Okay. So. But I happened to be, you know, more than three sheets, you know, at the time. And, I turned around to Lou and oh, wow, you actually seem really nice. And he just kind of looked at me. He gave me one of those looks, right? And I just bowed my head and went, I'm sorry. And I gave him a hug and left the room out of embarrassment.
It's the only way you could have dealt with that situation. So we mentioned Lou Reed and David Bowie, of course, the third member of that, in my mind, there's like the Father, the Son, and the Holy Ghost, and the ghost will be Iggy Pop.
Yeah.
Iggy, you worked with Iggy?
Work with him?
Mm.
No.
I would have thought you guys would have been a good fit.
Probably fit into the same clothes.
No, if anything, he's slimmer than you. He's got a waist that's about 22 inches, I think, Iggy. He does look like a snake now.
Yeah. He does, yeah.
We mentioned Without You I'm Nothing. Of course, this was the Placebo song that David then added and wrote his own piece for and kind of invited himself to the party. And I'm going to play for you now. This is Without You I'm Nothing.
Tick, 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 tick
Without You, I'm Nothing. That's Placebo and David Bowie. I'm here with Brian Molko. We've been talking about his group. Before we move on from talking about Placebo, I always, you know, the first thing that excited me about your band, I think, was the name. I love the fact that you were called Placebo. Now, where did that come from?
We had a criteria for the name, and the criteria was, can you imagine it being shouted by 40,000 people in unison? And Placebo worked, while some of the other ones didn't.
And normally, I guess, it gets spoken to Placebo. Yeah, so it sounds like a phrase in another language.
It is. It's Latin. It means I will please in Latin.
I've learned something.
Every day's a school day, Jonathan.
Finally, I've learned something. I won't remember it, though, Brian, but I've learned something.
Shall I write it down for you?
Tattoo it on my arm. Okay, so you have some things. We do this thing called Buried Treasure, where we ask people to share some kind of cultural artifacts, music, books, items, whatever that they want to talk about. What have you brought in for us? Let's start with the bag. What's in the bag?
Okay, you want to start with what's in the bag?
Let's start with a physical object of some sort.
Okay. Well,
there's another bag inside
the bag. Okay. So inside this bag, it's a paper bag because, you know, this item doesn't like plastic.
Okay.
You know, it doesn't react well to plastic. And this item itself, it travels everywhere with its own pillow.
It's got a cushion.
Yeah, it's got its own little cushion, you see.
Heavily indented.
Because it has a tendency to absorb energy. And you have to be very, very careful about it. Like here, for example, it's protecting it from all of the insipid vibrations from the playing of Sam Smith records.
Well, that's necessary. And also, you're sitting where Ken Bruce sometimes sits, so I don't know whether there's a certain vibration associated with Popmaster.
I was feeling something strange running up my spine, so that'll explain
strange it. Strange and long-lasting. Okay.
So what this is, can you guess what this is?
I've seen these before. Is this a Tibetan ringing bowl? Or
a Tibetan singing bowl.
Singing bowl.
Yeah. Yes.
It's a beautiful looking item.
So what one does is one holds it in the palm of one's hand as flatly as possible. And then with this wooden instrument, we try and go around the side to create. I'm getting there. You hear that frequency?
Very nice.
Would you like to have a go?
That's lovely. I feel like you are cleansing this space.
Well, I forgot to light my incense. That would have really cleansed the space. And I had Buddha beads for you as well.
So the vibrations build, don't they? That's nice. And what are these used for?
You can at least use my...
Where
my Buddha beads.
Are you Buddhist?
A student of Eastern philosophies.
And so why... Yeah. Oh, these smell like they've just come from one of those stores where in Camden where you buy paraphernalia. of this nature.
You mean a head shop?
Yes. Exactly what I mean.
Now, whatever would they sell in a head shop? What kind of heads do they sell?
So you're into Eastern spirituality, mysticism? You're into the religion itself?
Nah, more mysticism and philosophy.
Now, I'll be honest with you, Brian. I'm better at this than you. Listen to that.
Maybe you've got a steadier hand.
Maybe I'm just more connected to the universe.
Well.
That's a good sound I've got going.
Well, I had a little bit of performance anxiety, you know, which you obviously don't have because this is your show.
Yeah. Oh, Brian.
You know?
Whatever you need to say to make yourself feel better about your poor performance with the singing bowl, you go ahead.
You know, it's intimidating enough. Being in the same room as you, Jonathan.
Brian WC. I read somewhere, and I don't know if it's true, that the universe makes noises. There's chiming sounds, they believe, out there in space.
Yeah, the music of the spheres.
And that is supposedly similar to what we've just created here.
Wow. Okay. Well, you've taught me something. Every day is a school day.
I might have misheard that.
Okay.
I was in a head shop, and you know, some of the conversations you hear in those places are not to be repeated. Do you use that regularly? Do you use that often at home?
Occasionally, you know, but I use a recorded one when I meditate.
You use a recorded one?
Well, you can't exactly play this while you're meditating, can
Doesn't
you?
Doesn't that defeat somewhat the object, the kind of whole connection?
Well, okay, well, you're opening up a can of worms.
Fine, you've got kids. Couldn't you get one of the kids to sit in the corner using the singing bowl for pocket money while you meditate?
Now, listen, I got to tell you about something, yeah? What you absolutely must do one day before you die is get a Tibetan bowl massage.
Wow.
All right?
This is the first time anyone's ever said this to me.
You have to do this. It's one of the most incredible experiences you'll ever have.
Well, talk me through the
experience. Come out of there complete. You'll have never felt so serene in your entire existence.
Which wouldn't be hard.
Basically, you lie on your back, and there are strategically placed Tibetan bowls. They're bigger than this one. You know, one of them is in your
the groin area.
Yes.
Yeah. That's a big area for energy, of course, apparently.
Yeah.
Not so much as it used to be.
Oh, they have medication for that.
Okay.
And yes, the masseur will play the bowls like we just did.
On your body?
On your body. And the vibrations from the Tibetan bowls heal you from the inside.
Is this something you do on your own or can you do it with a friend?
You need a friend. You need somebody to...
play the bowls? No, I know that, but could you have a joint massage? I'm just thinking, could you and I go together?
We could.
I mean, I'm dropping enough hints here.
Okay.
Let's
all
do
right,
it.
All okay, right. Next time my guy's in London, we'll Tibetan bowl massage away.
My concern is...
Yeah?
What if I don't feel as serene as you promised afterwards? Should I fake it and tell you, wow, I've never felt so serene? Or would you rather have the unvarnished truth?
I'd rather the truth.
Okay.
Yes.
You say that now.
No, but the truth drives my life, so...
Okay, the truth it shall be, yeah. Brian, and on your head be it. Okay, so we've had the... That was a lovely moment. I enjoyed that. What else is in the bag for us? And I should point out, it's a recycled bag, which shows you in a very good light.
Oh, thank you. Yes, I'm trying to keep my carbon footprint down.
It's unattractive, but it's good. You're saving the planet.
Well, yeah, it's not Prada. No. All right. What I have here, and I've actually had this for a while,
okay.
And I've been waiting for a special occasion to actually open the box.
I'm on it.
And this is interactive,
okay.
Right? This, do you do DIY at home?
Yes.
Are you the DIY guy?
Well, we all do a bit of DIY at home. I've done a bit of grouting, I've done a bit of painting, I've done a bit of polishing, cleaned some aluminium.
I don't do any. This is a DIY synth.
Wow.
Right? So we've gone from, an ancient...
An ancient grasping for serenity.
To something very, very modern.
Well, let me see this.
So we need to unbox this, and probably while the song is playing, we should set ourselves a challenge to see if we can build it.
I admire your optimism.
In the time it takes to play a song.
Okay, well, the song we've got lined up to play was the
one
that
you... Oh, this is going to be impossible. I've just opened the box.
As soon as I saw the box, I thought he's... Okay, yeah, the box, it contains... many items, wire. I think we might need a soldering kit for this. I'm not sure. Look, we can give it a go. We can give it a go, Brian.
Oh, we don't.
Oh, look.
And we don't have
that.
A battery.
Look at that bag of tiny, tiny attachment parts.
Yeah, it's going to take us longer than them.
See,
it's going to take us longer than a song.
Can I just point something out here?
Yeah.
I think you are an old soul in that you understood the singing bowl and knew that would work, and you brought that in. The synth. You hadn't really thought this through. You're used to having
synths.
No,
I just wanted to put you on the spot and see if you could build it.
Build it, but I'd need a couple of hours. And I suspect I need my reading glasses. Well,
of which you have.
We will build it and maybe play it and then get it back to you. You know what? I've come to the conclusion that you didn't actually want to see me build it. You just couldn't build it yourself and you thought, I know what I'll do.
I'll get Jonathan Ross to build it.
I'll use this radio show opportunity to get someone to do the heavy lifting for me. Then I've got a new synth.
You've seen right through me.
Okay, let's go to your music instead. I'll box up the incredibly complicated look at it. And this is Velvet Underground you're going to play for us. Now, Velvet Underground, one of those bands hugely influential, if not indeed that commercially successful when they first appeared. Why this track and why in this form?
Because
we're going to play it in an unusual way.
Because it is a flexi-disc. And a flexi-disc, the object itself, actually has a sound.
Yeah. Where did you get...
Which is something that an MP3 doesn't have because it doesn't exist in the physical realm.
Where did this come from? Because I've never seen this before. It's blue, clear blue vinyl, but not vinyl, thin, whatever the thin...
Well, it's not vinyl, it's plastic. Yeah. It's a very cheap piece of plastic.
And have you played this before?
Never.
So this is the first time we've played this, so we hope that it's going to sound great.
It probably won't, and it won't go... you know, very far to proving my case that vinyl sounds better than MP3s.
But of course this isn't vinyl.
But this is not vinyl.
So we won't hold that against you. Okay, yeah. Where did you get this from?
I got this from California.
And what was it out for? This is not from when they first appeared.
No. You know, some random record company guy gave it to me.
Okay.
He was around for about 30 seconds.
I'm going to press play. Now, this doesn't happen very often in radio stations anymore, where you actually have a disc of some sort and there's a needle involved and a button has to be pressed. So this is, you know, it's a fairly, it's a step backwards in some ways, but in other ways, perhaps...
a step forward.
Yeah. This is Femme Fatale, Velvet Underground, and Nico. Do excuse me while I reach over. I'm leaving the microphone now. Here we go.
He's pressing play.
Was Femme Fatale, Velvet Underground with Nico, and that's playing on a flexi disc behind me. I might need to edge away from the mic again so I can just hit this button and stop playing. There you go, in case it makes sense. Brian, that was great.
Thank you.
It did sound different. I think it sounded different, or do you think that was me knowing it was coming to me from a different source?
No, it did sound different.
Yeah.
Okay. It's because basically anything that is not digital, that is analog, will sound different.
Because it hasn't been distilled to zeros and ones and then reformed.
Technically, yes. Yeah.
Well, technically is what we're talking about.
Yeah, okay, yeah. Well, it's science, you know. It's if an analog waveform is in the shape of a wave,
yeah,
while a digital one is broken, and that is a sonic disaster.
Well, that's Rich coming from a man who can't even assemble his own synth. Okay, Placebo, A Place for Us to Dream, 20 Years of Placebo. Is this out now? Is it out soon?
It's out in October.
It's out in October. Make sure you get a copy. And it's got a new single on it as well.
It's got a single called Jesus Son.
I'm wearing the badge right now. We'll play that next week.
Which we'd love to come and play on your show.
That would be awesome. Well, let's try and arrange that. You mean on the TV show?
Yeah.
Well, no.
Oh, come on.
I don't know. If there's space, definitely. I would love to have you on. Brian, great to have you here. Thank you so much for coming in.
All right, thank you.
Brian Mocker, ladies and gentlemen. Sunday.